accession number 210058, reel 1.
Bill Taylor, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Penrith Farm, Chertsey.
Which year was this?
1921.
Did both your mother and father come from Chertsey?
Well, my mum, they're just villages outside. Both of them come from villages. Longcross, my father was a village of Longcross. My mother was Thorpe, but only was a couple of miles away from Chertsey.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was a farmer and a butcher,
Did you go to school and grow up in Chertsey?
Yes, I did. I went to Sepwith's school and left at 14 years of age. And I went to work for my aunt, who had a greengrocer's shop and ran a florist business. That's in Chertsey, in London Street, Chertsey. And I stayed there till 1939. I joined the Territorial Army in I went to join in 1938. But I didn't go till October of 38. And they said, wait till the new year. So I signed the first week of January 39.
Why did you want to join the TA?
Because a gentleman who came out of the Czechoslovakia and said we all got to fight with Hitler, and I suppose I got a bit inspired by him, and I knew a lot of the local lads who were in the territorials, and they said it was good to be in, and they were the local East Surrey battalion, the 2nd 6th East Surrey was in the Driller in Chertsey. And so I went and joined then. I signed the first week of January 39.
What kind of experiences did you have with the 2nd, 6th, Surrey's pre-war?
Well, I went to Bisley butt marking. We went to the Easter holidays and through Richmond holidays, I went down there butt marking. And we weren't allowed to fire there. We had to go butt marking, but we were looking forward to, we went to the camp at Hyde in Folkestone in the August of 39. And I went for a fortnight, but I was only allowed a week because my aunt couldn't spare me. Anyway, I came back, the other fellows came back, they were only back about a week and they were caught up. We got caught up on the 28th of August, 39.
What happened then?
We all had to go to Richmond. We went on coal lorries that had been commandeered, local trucks had been commandeered for the army. And we travelled up on our coal lorries, open coal lorries. And I went to Richmond because that was the territorial headquarters of the 2nd, 6th at the time. And from there we went, spent the first night in Chatham Dean Barracks down in Kent near Rochester, the Royal Engineers Barracks, and we had to sleep in a big storage shed, and it was extremely cold, and we had no bed, it was a concrete floor. I was in A Company, all a lot of us was put in there. It was a very difficult night, a nasty sort of night to remember. But next day we moved into tents behind the barracks, because there were still some Royal Engineers in the barracks. And we were going between the barracks and some ammunition dumps, which were all around that area, and quite a lot there. We were put on guard the following night on patrols. We patrolled around the ammunition dumps, and then gradually got on patrols on the small gauge railway line that used to run from a large hill where the ammunition was stored underneath the large hill. I think it was before this century, it was a big store of ammunition. I mean, it used to run through to Upner and to Chatham. There was a training ship called the Arethusa at Upner. We used to patrol along the railway line. And we got, sometimes we went to Chatham and on the tunnels and the Midway Bridge over from Rochester to Chatham. Shorts, seaplane people had a factory down there. We used to guard that. Some of the boys used to guard that sometimes. And because it turned out a very nasty winter, that 39-40 winter. In December of 39, we were all brought back to Richmond. They sent an assignment of our fellows from A Company to the Far East to join the 2nd Battalion, the regular battalion. Of course, we were sad to see them go. And then we were sent back. I went to Chatham Driller next. I went and slept in Chatham Driller. One night, we had a corporal in charge of the guard. We'd done four on and four off there. We used to do two on and four off at Chatham Dean. But we were on four hours on duty and 4 hours off. because we only had about 2.5 hours, 3 hours in bed, because we had quite long marches or walks to get to changing over with the old guard. But we'd been issued a rum issue, of course, most of us were teetotalers. I'd never touched a drink, alcoholic drink in my life. Anyway, I didn't have a drink, but a corporal drank most of it because he overslept and got drunk. He got busted. I won't say his name, but he's dead now. I know he's dead, but I knew him as a friend anyway. But we stayed on duty all night. It was a bitter night, a lot of snow and freezing cold. Anyway, we were brought back to Richmond again, and most of the battalion went to France. And I think it was March or April they went to France, 1940. And I was just a bit too young. Churchill hadn't become Prime Minister. Neville Chamberlain was still Prime Minister. But Churchill was the first Lord of the Admiralty, and the man who was going to take over from Chamberlain. We all wanted him to take over. And he stopped, brought a law out, stopping young people, because he had many complaints from mothers and sweethearts and wives of young boys going abroad. And I was kept behind with a group of other fellas, mostly younger than myself. And when Europe fell to the Germans and the remnants of the East Siders came back, I was sent down to join the Royal Sussex Regiment down with West Worthing for a short period. We had obsolete weapons, like Dad's army, really. I used to carry a boy's anti-tank rifle around with me, which was obsolete, only had one little shell, and it had been written off as no good. But that was my weapon of defence. But we all had the old Lee Enfield rifles when I come back, which we should have in the first place. And then I was in the end of 41, towards the end of 41, I went with the Sabre of the Surreys, but I put in D Company then when the boys came back, well, left them and came back. And I stayed with D Company till the December of 41. And then we were sent to...
Did you have any coastal defence duties?
Well, we were at Kettingland, and D Company was at Kettingland, and we used to go on patrols at a little place called Benacre, which was not too far from Southwold, in between Southwold and Lowestoft, and we put up barbed wire down there. The Royal Engineers came and showed us to put apron wire in up the barbed wire, and they tried to show us how to put up the scaffolding. Of course, we were pretty useless at that. We weren't at all skilled at that, so they done it all in the end. A lot of scaffolding along the east coast there. And then we got taken back to Bedford, and then we went to on the aerodromes down at Mildenhall. I was stationed at Mildenhall for a short time on patrols again in Roadblocks and Lakenheath and Methwold. There were three aerodromes. And then we were brought back to Henley, and a group of fellows were posted in the Middle East.
Did you, at that time in 1940-41, think the Germans would invade?
Well, I couldn't understand why they didn't invade. I thought they were sure to invade, but I couldn't understand why they didn't invade. And it was a great relief at the attack Russia, for the poor Russians, as everybody knows, went through hell. But I think we were fortunate, maybe we were confident we could hold out, but I don't know if we would have held out.
Would you listen to wireless at that time?
We did hear the wireless quite often. We did hear the wireless quite often. The boys had a set. We weren't issued with sets. We weren't in bullets. We were in tents a lot of the time.
What would you listen to on the wireless?
Well, any news bulletins and any popular songs. And of course, they were coming out. Vera Lynn was coming out singing all her famous songs. And we didn't have a lot of time really to listen to it.
Were you in any bombing by the German Air Force?
At Mildenhall, they dropped some bombs. It was a lone plane, dropped bombs, and they blew the end of a barracks. I was sleeping in the barracks up on the first floor, and they blew the end of the barracks out. That would be in 1941, I think. I think it was 41. And the post corporal was on a bike, he got killed. He was a RAF boy. And a couple of Nappy girls, I think, got killed. And two more civilians. But we were still doing guard duties and on patrols and roadblocks. We didn't get hurt. None of us military fellas got hurt in it. And then I was posted to the Middle East. We went up to Scotland and sailed on the Louis Pasteur, the French liner that had been converted by the British for a troop ship.
Is this the whole of your battalion?
No, there was only a few of us from we were posted to the Buffs to make up the strength of the Buffs, because they had been up the desert and had a lot of casualties, and they were being reformed and they wanted more men to make up the strength of their fighting force out there. And Auchinleck was in charge at the time, and we went out there and we landed at Port Chewford and went to Fayed.
What was the voyage in Louis Pasteur like?
Well, it was awful because we took nearly 9 weeks to get there to Port Chewford. We crossed the Atlantic to Halifax, well, in the mouth of that. We couldn't see Halifax, but we reloaded with stocks and supplies at Halifax, and we travelled down most of the American coast. I didn't learn this till after the war, and then we came back across to Freetown and anchored outside Freetown, and we were there for about a week. And of course we were all wanted to get ashore. Of course nobody was allowed ashore at Freetown. Eventually we got down to Simonstown, just off Cape Town in South Africa, and we were there again for about a week, and some of the convoy left us. Ships went to India and other places, but I was taken ashore with some of the lads for a little break twice while we were at Cape Town. We went up by bus to Sir Andrew Ducat's, I think he was a British ambassador at the time. His estate was next to Field Marshal Smuts's, and I always remember it because of blackouts in England, and it was all lit up with fairy lights and red wonderful spread of tea and cakes and all kind of luxury items. Of course, Cape Town was booming, and when we come out the dock gates, they were selling little pineapples 5 for a shilling. I always remember that. So it was ridiculous, 5 for a shilling. And I always remember those things because I was in a greengrocer and I couldn't believe it. And we had lots of jam and with melon and ginger and things like that on the deck of the ship till we stopped at Durban again and took some Aussies back on the ship there in manacles and handcuffs that had deserted from previous. We ran up to the desert and we got to Port Chewford. We unshipped at Port Chewford and I got taken to an assembly camp called Fayed. And to go to our different battalions, because we had a huge consignment of fellas I was on F deck actually at the time, on the Louis Pasteur. Anyway, while we were at Fayed, a captain came round with a sergeant and said, anybody like to do anything a bit interesting, you boys? I can't tell you the mission, what it would be, but I can promise you you'll have a very interesting time if you come and join us, but I'll come and see you after this meeting's over. Well, 7 of us volunteered, and all I can tell you, our commanding officer sent an invitation to come in for an interview. We still didn't know what we were letting ourselves in for.
So why did you volunteer?
Well, I was so sad because I'd never been in action with I never got sent to the Far East with the first lot of East Side. I never went to France. And we were all biting at the bit sort of thing. And we knew the desert all wave had been up and down. And then Auchinleck, we'd made a good start. We'd gone up to Bab Derna, up towards Benghazi again. In another attack, of course. We got beat back by the... When I volunteered for the WS interview and I went to see a gentleman, Major Colin Campbell, and he was out of the London Scottish. He had his kilt on. He asked me why I volunteered. And I said, well, I was keen to see what the officer said. He said, well, you won't be long before you'll be in action. You should come training with us. We've reformed the Middle East Commandos. We've disbanded them, he said. And we were known at the moment as a special service brigade. So two other fellows from the Buffs, Nobby Mills and Jack Avery and myself. I don't know, and another two came afterwards, Bill George and a chap named Diskett. They'd all come from the Surreys originally, except Nobby Mills, he was in the Buffs. We joined this training unit up between Mersey Matru and Saloum. It was right on the coast. It just went to post office field number, the camp did. But the training wasn't too hard because they were reforming them. But there was a few chaps there, not many officers. Suddenly a whole batch of officers came. And they turned out wonderful men. And my officer, I was put in Lieutenant Michael Roberts' troop. He'd come out of the Northumberland Fusiliers. He volunteered as well. They were all volunteers. And I joined his section. And
what letter did that section have or number?
I can't remember. I should remember it, because I ought to remember it. I used to write, I've got an address somewhere. I've got a letter I wrote to my mum, and I still put the Buffs in, because Major Campbell called me up and said, why'd you put the Buffs on for you in a special service brigade? Because I was the eldest of six boys and two sisters. One of the sisters had died, and I didn't want to worry her too much. So in the future, you write the field post office and come out. I was in B Squadron. I was in B Squadron at the time, that's right. B Squadron. And when Rommel started to attack again, it was a hurried retreat to Alamein, and we didn't have hardly any weapons to defend ourselves with. And of course, we got to Al Darba by some Kiwis. We had a single line track up the desert to Al Darba, and they went on to Murder and True. We got a train at Murder and True, a good train it was. And we led on the open tricks, and we got machine gunned by the Stukas, and a few bombs dropped, but they didn't hit the train. And we got back to Al Darba, and fortunate for us, there were some trucks there, and we got back to Alamein. We formed a line at Alamein. We were straight away put in a line of the trenches that had been done. I suppose the Royal Marines had dug them, scooped out. They weren't very well dug.
So this must have been about June 42.
It was July 42. It was end of June to Brook Fell. Maybe it was about 21st or 22nd. And we got back about the 28th or 29th of June, I think. And we made the defence line up, but of course we couldn't see a lot, and we didn't know a lot. The officers didn't seem very well informed either. They were a bit puzzled themselves, and they seemed to want to find out information, which was lacking, really. And anyway, after I'd been with them in the line, there was about 70 of us commandos at the time in the squadron, in our group of defence fellows. Suddenly they came round and said, back to the barracks in Cairo. I think it's called Mustafa. I think it's Mustafa. There's two bandings. One in Alexander, one in Cairo. I went to both of them. Anyway, we went to Cairo and they rigged us out and they said, there's some of you are going on a mission with Long Range Desert Group. And I was in that with my officer, Lieutenant Roberts. And Major Campbell was in the charge of us at the time, and Sergeant Major Arthur Swinburne, he was a very tall, thin Sergeant Major, hard man, but a good man, and Sergeant Evans from the Welsh Guards, he was our sergeant. And we suddenly, with some trucks, pulled up and said, jump in, because I didn't know anything about the Long Range Desert Group. And we travelled down the Nile to our suit.
In what?
And to a place called Assut, A-S-S-U-I-T. And we stuck across the desert to Kufra. And it was several hundred miles. And Kufra was a base of the Long Range Desert Group. It was deep in the desert, and they operated from there behind the lines. David Lloyd Owen was in charge, so he was only a captain at a period of time. He finished up a major general.
Did you get to know him?
I got to know him. I got to know him better since the war. I was only a private, and he was a captain. The officers mixed with the officers, and we were kept down really in our sections. And there was a section of chaps came there, and two nights before we went on the raid, because we still had travelled up the desert through the sands, to get on the coastal road between Tobruk and Alamein to Tobruk, and the supply line for the Germans and Italians going down to the front. And we got to a place called Et al Etna.
What?
Et al Etna. It was a scrubby little oasis place, but the long range desert group knew it. And we had a photograph taken there, and I always remember the photograph because a namesake of mine, who's no relation, I left, and Taylor took a photo of all us grouped together, us, just the commandos, not the long range desert group. And there was a section of German chaps dressed in German uniform came and joined us, but they weren't in the photo. They spoke fluent German, and they'd passed the wagons. We had three Chevrolet trucks we were on, and they were painted with a swastika and the date palm of Rommel's Africa Corps. And we went with these Germans, guided us onto the road with long range desert group, and we passed through the roadblocks and got up to the Brook Peninsula, right on time, which was on September the 13th, 1942.
So you weren't recognised as British?
No, if we'd been stopped, we would be down as prisoners of war. We were in the three open Chevrolet trucks. We had blankets on around our feet and our weapons around our feet and then under our legs, all in. When we were at that last oasis, Et al Etna, we had a choice of weapons we could take. The old Lee Enfield rifle, the Bren gun, or the Tommy gun. The majority chose a Tommy. Nobody chose a rifle. And about four of us chose a Bren. I chose a Bren because I'd been used to a Bren gun in East Surrey's.
Why did nobody choose a rifle?
Well, I thought it was too old-fashioned and First World War stuff. And they fancied the Tommies, but we'd been practising with the Tommy gun. The first time we ever handled one was at Kufra. And we found some of the magazines weren't very good, and they were issued to us chaps to practice with. And the armourer, Sergeant Alford, his name was, and he came in, he said, the magazines are too weak, really, on these. They come from the villains of New York, and they weren't really army issue. But the poor chaps who had them were let down badly by them. And when we got into Tobruk that night, we were told that we were all confident, so confident it was going to be a success. And we were told that Wellington were going to bomb Tobruk for about 2 hours, up to 9 o'clock. And our raid was due to start half past nine. And we started dead on time, right on exactly half past nine. We split up in our different sections. And a Colonel Hazeldine had come over, John Hazeldine. He was an old intelligence officer of the Long Range Desert Group and intelligence officer in the Middle East. He spoke fluent Arabic, but he took over from Major Campbell while we were at Kufra. It was his idea of this raid. But he went off down into the brook with a truck with some of the chaps who were dressed as Germans. They were Palestinian Jews, really. And they had been persecuted in Germany, and they'd fled to Palestine, it was then. And they went off with some of them, and two or three other of his henchmen. Of course, they bumped into trouble straight away, and he was killed probably within a few minutes, unbeknown to any of us, because we had to go on a separate job to go to see what we had detailed to do.
What were you detailed?
Well, I was sent with Lieutenant Robertson and Lieutenant Murphy to put out big guns out of action on the perimeter overlooking Tobruk. We found we bumped into some ITIs and a wadi, and they were shouting, one or two were shouting, giving themselves away. So we got up there, we had the commando boots on, it was dark, I was saying. We got up there, of course, Lieutenant Robertson, he was such a good bloke. He only had a revolver, I think. That's all I can remember him carrying. And of course, the boys, you give me a bit of cover in fire, Taylor, we're going to do this bunker. and be better. Of course, some of the Tommies called me, quick, come in, Father, bring into the bunker, fire. And I fired a brain gun inside. Of course, they were all yelling and screaming. They were shouting Mamma Mia and different things. Sopped. And anyway, there was a patrol must have been going around because they were shouting somewhere around. We didn't want to wait for them to come back. We had to push on. We bumped in another body, and we thought there was we might be ambushed, but we weren't sure. Nobody opened up on us. And we went through an Italian field kitchen. Could it all darkness and no foreign side, not really, only from our side, it was just wiped out of Zaito position. We got through there, nobody bumped into nobody, went through it, and got to where these guns should have been. We found their position, and the gun had been moved. And of course, the Zulu was coming in with the Royal Marines from Alexander, the Royal Marine, 11th more Royal Marines were coming in from Alexander with the Sikh and the Zulu and the Sikh. The Zulu was leading her, and she went down. I can't remember which one. One of them got hit straight away. I've got a letter from one of the men who was on the support ships, but that's another story. And of course, the floodlights came on, the searchlights came on down on the town of Tobruk. They put the searchlights on and lowered them down. Of course, the Sikh and the Zulu were caught in their beams, and they got fired unmercifully. And nearly all the Royal Marines never made the shore. They never got. They had little boats that were made by Egyptians. They were very, very poorly made too. And they were sunk in the harbour, and a lot of them were drowned. Very few men survived it, as the Royal Marines. In fact, I've read there was 90 got back to Alexandra who couldn't get ashore, so they were fortunate to do that. But of course, as the night wore on, we were looking for blokes, a lot of firing down in the town of Tobruk and around that area. So Lieutenant Robert said, we've got to make our way down. He said, I want to find Major Campbell. Somebody volunteered to go and find him, because none of us knew he'd gone off, and it was Sergeant Major Swinburne. And he said, nobody volunteered. He said, I can't let my Sergeant Evans go. And the corporal wouldn't go, and the Lance Corporal got his ankle or something, broke his ankle or something. And he was limping. He said, you're a go, Taylor, aren't you? He said, well, you've got to go. He said, I've got to get a message to Major Campbell and tell him we're going to come down into Tobruk itself and hope to link up with him or one of the other officers and go about our duties down there, whatever we can find to destroy. We were supposed to destroy ammunition dumps and fuel and as well as other anything that was useful to the Axis powers. So, of course, I had to get back through these bodies. I couldn't walk boldly through them. And,
you were by yourself?
I was on my own then. And he said, I'll keep your brain gun. So I didn't have any weapons with me. And he said, well, keep your brain gun. He threw one of some of the Tommies were no good. So he threw one or two Tommy guns away. And one of the boys carried the brain gun, and I left him. Because I got back to where the three Chevrolet lorries were. I got about 40 or 50 yards of them. I had to creep and crawl, and gangs of Italians or Germans, lots of figures around them, and I didn't understand the language. So I said, I'll get shot or killed if I go up there. There's no point in going up there. So I retraced my steps and tried to get back to Lieutenant Roberts. Because going down, I was unaware of the landscape. I didn't know how to get down there quite. And I could hear voices down below, but it was mostly in a foreign tongue. And I got back to, found the position where I'd left them, through these two bodies, but dawn was breaking then, and the firing had died down, and for some while died down the fight, and the searchlights were still on the sea, and the poor Royal Marines were coming ashore, and what did get ashore wasn't very many, and they couldn't fight, because they'd lost their weapons, they were near enough drowned, as I say, poor chaps. And anyway, we had a rendezvous if anything went wrong, but of course none of us believed it, and I couldn't remember the rendezvous several miles away from Tobruk. And as daylight came, I was still on my own. Of course, I couldn't find anybody I knew, couldn't find anybody at all. So I crept and crawled, and I thought I'd get to the perimeter of Tobruk and t- sort of walking out to bump into some other survivors. And I got up to late on the afternoon, the 14th of September, patrol of the Germans and the Italians were out looking for us all. And I suddenly saw a patrol of Germans not far away from me. I got down by a little tiny bush with no real cover. And I see they'd spotted me, and so I stood up and held my hand up. And the leader was a sergeant, the Felt Weibo, I think they called him. And he came up and he got one of the others who could speak quite a bit of English and asked me what I was, and I told him a British soldier. And they took me in